Chapter 3. Teddy. I was born, so they tell me, on March 30th, 1854, outside a small town on Cape Cod, Massachusetts, called North Sandwich. North Sandwich is about 15 miles from Plymouth, and one of my ancestors landed at Plymouth in 1630 from England. He married a woman of the Bourne family who had come over on the Mayflower in 1620, and it was they who settled at North Sandwich, and why, I guess, the Ellis family has lived there ever since. Papa says that we belong to a distinct group of settlers, that we are descended from one of the oldest surviving families in these parts, and that gives us an edge over all the newcomers to this country. And there are a lot of them these days, he says, all nationalities showing up, looking to make their luck, even though we were here first and should have more rights in that regard. The Ellis family got their land, on which our house is built, from the Indians. Papa has a land deed on a piece of tree bark signed by the cross of the Indian chief, Cochitache, and it's dated 1668, so that proves everything he says is true. We do deserve respect for our heritage. The Ellises were adventurers, and many of them men over the years went off to be sailors and soldiers and pioneers. Papa says all the folks in our family have a wandering heart. I don't know what sort of heart I have. Still, the old household is there, although none of us live there at the moment, which is a great shame, and the first time, Papa said, in over 200 years that the Ellises have absented themselves from North Sandwich. My name is Theodora Mary Ellis, and we moved to Boston last year for no good reason that I could see. Here I go to primary school, and it is here that I bring my diary to write in, because school half bores me to death. I like to write and I like to read, but I hate schoolwork, which is boring and of no consequence, I feel, to anyone. I sneak my notebook in that Papa got me for my 13th birthday, and now it is the 4th of April, 1867, and I write in secret because the teacher, Miss Elms, has her back to the class. She is not an attentive teacher. Even if she had her front to the class, I suspect she would not see me or notice. My diary is a pretty notebook with a cover of calfskin. I have other gifts of calfskin, like my dainty gloves, a hair slide which holds my hair from my face, and a leather satchel that I keep drawings in, as Papa is in the livestock business and it's easy for him to come upon these things. We only moved to Boston last year, and it has been hard to grow used to. I miss the countryside and running in the fields and spending time down by the water, fishing and carving things from branches with my penknife. Stepmother says I should have been a boy. Maybe she's right. Stepmother is my stepmother because my real mother died when I was 5. I don't have many memories of her, only that there was a lot of wailing in the house, followed by a lot of quietness and praying, and Papa was all white in the face. And then Papa was around all the time except when he had to go to work driving cattle, and Josephine, my older sister, was in charge of the house then, and she liked to use the wooden spoon to whack you on the arm or behind if she didn't like your manners. Folks always said I was the perfect image of my father, which I found very strange considering he has a big, dark, bushy beard. I used to stare at him when I was younger and try to picture my hair on him and him in a dress, and that made me giggle, and then Josephine would wave the wooden spoon at me. There were 4 children in our family that Mama left behind when she went to heaven. Josephine is the oldest and the wickedest. She was 11 when Mama died, and so she took on the family to mind us. I don't think she really wanted to do this, because I have only ever known her to be sour, and maybe that is why. Victor came next, and he was 9 when Mama died, and I never really paid much heed to him, for he didn't want a little sister trailing after him, and so over time I stopped running after him, but I think that maybe I should have kept on trailing him, for when he was 11, he drowned in the lily pond after borrowing a boat and losing his oar and finding himself tipped over and not able to breathe at all. I was afraid of the lily pond because we had often seen snakes in there, and if there's one thing that I'm fearful in this world, it's snakes. I expect that's what Victor was thinking about when he got tipped in. That and the water closing in over his head. Josephine was very upset and cried for a long time afterwards. Papa cried too, and I hadn't seen him cry even when Mama died, so I knew this was a very hard thing for us all. I did not cry, for I felt that someone needed to be strong for the family, but I felt enormous guilt over not being with him as his little sister. Perhaps I should have saved him, or least gone to get help. That left me the second oldest then, and after me came Beatrice, 3 years younger, a sweet little thing who we all call Trixie, although she does trail me around sometimes, which I don't like as I prefer to be on my own. I have one lithograph of my mother. She looks cold and sad, and I think I can see how I don't look like her at all. Josephine does, about the eyes, and maybe Trixie too, but it's hard to see because the picture is so small and it's gray and black and not color like in real life at all. I have never had my photograph taken, but Papa says we will get one done this year, the whole family, in Boston, for he knows just the man to do it on Washington Street. In North Sandwich, we didn't have any help in the household as there wasn't much money around and we had to do everything ourselves. There was a man called Leone who lived in the village, and everyone knew something had happened to him when he was a baby, and then he was like a child, only in a man's body. He ran messages and chopped wood for everyone who wanted in the village, and he never took any money for it, only food, and all of us kids were fascinated by the big old axe he carried most everywhere. That axe was the sharpest axe in the world, it was said. It could slice an apple thinly the same as a big piece of wood. Leone never knocked, but just came straight into the kitchen, and I wasn't scared of him, not really, not if Josephine was around. One day, Josephine had him at work chopping wood in our yard, and I was close by watching him, wood chips flying everywhere, and you had to be careful and shield your eyes in case a splinter went right in there and got stuck. Josephine had been sweeping, and she came to the door and said, "Leone, bring me an armful of wood." And Leone left his big shiny axe in a log, half cut, and went off into the house. Now, the axe being a thing of talk among all the boys in the neighborhood was right in front of me. I knew just about every boy, and some girls probably wanted a go of it. And here it was, just me and the log half cut and the big old axe. The temptation was too much. I took up the axe, raised it, and brought it down, whack, on the log. Well, that first blow brought Leone running. He dropped the armful of wood in the middle of the kitchen floor right at Josephine's feet and came flying out the door after me. I turned and ran. I ran like a hare being chased by a whippet. And when I looked behind, I saw Leone was after me with the axe and Josephine was after him with the broom. "Don't you touch a hair on her head, Leone," screeched Josephine. I jumped into a field and hid in the undergrowth of a butternut tree, one of the best hiding spots I knew, and lucky I was able to get to it, but I had to lie there for some hours till it was safe to come out and Leone was gone. The incident caused a coolness between Leone and me, so I cut his acquaintance. If I saw him coming, I would cross the road. We never saw eye to eye properly after that, but all the boys and girls in North Sandwich knew I was the girl who had swung the axe, and I think many were rightly jealous and also in awe of me, too, maybe over that. Boston, where we live now, is just all right. Here in the city, it's houses and houses and houses, and parklands ain't the same as the fields I know in North Sandwich. They just ain't. Stepmother says I shouldn't say ain't, and that I need elocution lessons and deportment classes because I've been running half wild ever since my mother died. This makes Josephine mad because everyone knows Josephine did her best, even if she was mostly cross all the time, and so stepmother and her don't see eye to eye the same way as me and Leone didn't. In fact, when I think about it, I suppose I don't quite see eye to eye with stepmother either, but Josephine said that's always the way with stepmothers, and she seems to know about these things, her about to turn 19 and all. Before we left for Boston, I did patch things up with Leone in a way, for he came into the yard one day just after I'd borrowed 2 donuts that Josephine had left on the kitchen table to cool. Thinking that I'd maybe hurt his feelings over the axe incident, I said, "Hello, Leone, don't you want a donut?" I held them out, and he took both. As I walked out the yard, I realized how foolish I'd been. 1 would have done just as well as 2. "You old pig," I said as he walked away and couldn't quite hear me. "I hope they choke yer." Sometimes I see a look in Josephine's eyes like she wants to choke stepmother. Stepmother is a very prim and proper lady and has never really taken to Josephine or Trixie or I. We are the original women of Papa's household. I suppose it's hard for a woman to come into an already made family to take over from a mother who is long dead and from a daughter who has her own way of doing things and a grumpy, cross look on her face. I find the best way to deal with stepmother is to keep out of her way. The less she sees of me, the better. That's hard here in Boston because mostly people stay inside their houses, only going out for visits or for shopping excursions, neither of which I have much time for. Stepmother says I'm getting to an age now where I need to be learning how to be a lady, and if I want any kind of future at all, I have to get my education and refine myself. I'm not sure how I'm supposed to refine myself, but I feel fine being unrefined. Thank you very much. The thing I've been thinking is that boys really do have it best. They can wear trousers or short pants, allowing them to jump and climb and even ride a horse with ease. Last year, when we first came here, stepmother had two new dresses made for me for school, and she said when I was 14, I had to start wearing a corset, and she would let me off till then. She threatens to take me shopping to Jordan Marsh department store nearly every week, and I always have to find an excuse as to why I can't go. I suppose I can see that my body is changing, and as much as I try to hide it, it always damn pokes through, and I feel that corset creeping up on me, closer and closer, tighter and tighter, squeezing my chest into my very throat. I know once I put that thing on, I won't be able to bend, and even sitting will be uncomfortable. I don't want to wear a bustle dress, and I don't want to have to put my hair up, neither. Josephine says I have no choice about the corset, and I'm lucky that I won't have a whole household to run by myself and children to look after while wearing one. You're not old before your time, she says, like me. I have no idea what she means by that, but she has been doing a lot of shopping lately herself with brown paper packages arriving to the house at all hours. And she's been taking a great interest in her appearance, I've noticed, piling her hair high and wearing pearl drop earrings and scent. Sometimes I hear her humming and singing to herself, which is not like Josephine at all. I write in this diary most days in school, but yesterday I very nearly got caught by Miss Elms, mostly, I'd say, because I was too quiet, which she noticed. It's rare I'm too quiet. She says I'm a fidgeter. Now I'm writing in my bedroom, which I share with Josephine and Trixie, and I suppose I will pass the time, for there really is not much to do when I'm at home. Perhaps I will describe the house where I live, here in Beacon Hill. The house is red brick with black shutters, a glossy black door with a big brass knocker and black gas lantern set in the walls outside. The streets are cobbled, which are noisy if ever a cart or cab passes by. In this house, we have a lot of modern appliances, some of which stepmother ordered from the catalog she likes to read. We have a stove here, which we didn't have in North Sandwich. There, Josephine did all the cooking on the big fire in our fireplace, which was 5 or 6 feet wide with a crane on one side that could be swung out over the fire to hold the kettles for boiling. On top of the mantelpiece, we kept a vase to hold lamp lighters, and the oil we burned was whale oil. In that house, we had a good bedroom and a good parlor, which we never used unless we had company. All the best things were in the parlor. The best carpet and furniture, our souvenir shells, glass ornaments, paper flowers, and the family Bible. Here in Boston, stepmother has people over to her parlor all the time, and I suppose it's nice to use the room, but then I think, well, it just doesn't feel special no more. I miss our big brick oven in North Sandwich. Every Wednesday and Saturdays, Josephine had a fire built in it, and when it was hot and the fire had burned out and the ashes were raked, she had her pies, cakes, brown bread, and beans all ready, and she put them in the oven with a long-handled iron shovel. The items that required the longest time were put in the back part to bake, and the beans were left in overnight. I don't think the food tastes the same here in Boston. The air doesn't smell the same, and neither does the bread. Papa's business is good now, but for a long time in North Sandwich, it wasn't. I guess that's why we are able to have the extra help now in the house, with a house girl who comes in to clean and the cook who prepares food, but she doesn't spend all day here, and we share her with another house. Daddy's job is to drive hogs and cattle and bring them into Boston to sell, and he has to be away for long spells on the road, going as far out as Ohio and sometimes Chicago and back. We have an uncle in Chicago, but I've never met him, for he was one of the wanderers who left North Sandwich when he was young. I've begged Papa to take me with him on the road, but he says he doubts I'd have the stamina to ride out so long. I've told him it would be not a bother, for I was always good with horses, and I'd dress in trousers and overalls and a wide felt hat like him, and no one would even have to know I was a girl, and sometimes I can see that he's considering it, but he knows it won't please stepmother, and so far he hasn't brought me with him. Often I think if Victor were here, he'd have been long out helping Papa on the road, and that sometimes he'd like to bring me for family company, only because I'm a girl, I'm not allowed. If I was a boy, he wouldn't think twice about it. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if stepmother had never come along at all. I think we'd still be in North Sandwich, for one thing, because it was stepmother who comes from Boston and who wanted to move back there. The first we knew about stepmother was when a letter arrived from Papa from Boston saying he was again embarking on the sea of matrimony. Trixie wanted to know what matrimony was because we called her a mother's money when she was cribbin', and she thought it was something to do with her. But Josephine reassured her it had resolutely nothing to do with her and all to do with Papa's lust and greed. Your father has made a fool of himself and married a widow with 3 children and he with 3 of his own. After she said that, she went quiet and said we weren't to repeat her words, and she was sorry for saying them, and Trixie asked her what lust meant, and Josephine said if Trixie ever uttered the word out loud again, she'd take the stick to her behind. Josephine wasn't afraid to use a stick. Mostly she used a spoon or hairbrush, but the stick was the worst. Josephine went about the house, banging and clattering, pulling out all the cupboards, and embarking on a big cleaning spree after that. We had a turkey killed for the welcoming dinner, and it was hard to be useful while also keeping out of Josephine's way, for no matter what we did, she was liable to shriek at us at any moment. 2 days later, the new family arrived, stepmother in the biggest bonnet I'd ever seen, with tiny ornamental cherries and oranges all piled up on top. I don't know how they didn't topple right off her head. She brought with her Henrietta, a young lady about the same age as Victor, had he lived, and Willie, who was a year older than I. Henry, her youngest son, was 2 years older than Trixie. We all sat in the kitchen, Trixie and I on one side of the fireplace, Willie and Henry on the other, staring. Josephine sat at the table with Papa, looking on at the new stepmother and Henrietta. I wondered why you'd call your daughter Henrietta and your son Henry, and thought how stepmother must like that name very much indeed. Stepmother had a smile on her face, but you could see it was hard for her to keep it, as she kept looking about the kitchen, her eyes darting all over the place, on the surfaces, on the cupboards, and on the soot that hung on the spiderwebs in the corner, missed by Josephine's big flapping broom. She was sizing everything up, taking account of all before her. And it was clear to me and Josephine, too likely, that she didn't care much for what she saw. The next morning, Willie and I went out to get acquainted. He was evidently homesick. He did not like the house, he said. He did not like the smell in the air, and I sniffed, but all I could smell were farmer bonfires, which always burned at that time of year. It wasn't a bad smell, I thought. We were used to the burning smell of fires out here. I offered to run him a race down Schoolhouse Hill. He said boys did not run races in Boston. I asked him if he could jump over the fence with 2 rails in it, and he said boys did not jump fences in Boston. I said, I think you are some pumpkins up in Boston. I think I can lick yer. And I put my fist right up in his face, and he backed off and away from me. No one talks of fighting in Boston, he said, except the Irish boys. I said, oh yeah? Well, I wish you were an Irish boy then instead of a stupid Bostonian. He said Boston had everything, and I said, oh yeah, like what? The museum, he scrunched his nose at me, it's got everything in the whole world in it. Boston Common, the biggest common in the world. And we've got the Bunker Hill Monument, and it has 294 steps to the top. I didn't care much for any monument. I thought Willie was the biggest sissy I ever met. I didn't know then that stepmother was not to be messed with. That stepmother never had any plans to settle in North Sandwich, probably, and it was city life or no life for her. She went and persuaded Papa that with his livestock business, he'd be better off in Boston anyway, and it didn't take long for him to have us all pack up and take our house in Beacon Hill and move away from the homestead that had been in our family for 200 years. Trixie took to moaning again every night for a week after the move until stepmother brought her into Jordan Marsh's, where she picked out a soft doll, and that was the end of the moaning. But I was too old for dolls. If I go out, stepmother wants to know where I'm going. She has a tail on me all the time, the freedom I used to have left behind, floating in the sky somewhere over North Sandwich. There's only one thing for it in my eyes, and that's to convince Papa that he's got to take me on the road. If he did that, I'd be days away from here. There'd be no talk of dresses or corsets, of deportment and posture. I'd have the road ahead and adventure in my grasp. There's only one thing for it, and that's to convince Papa. Dear Diary, I will do it if it's the last thing I do. I'm an Ellis, and the Ellises were built to explore. Even if I am only an Ellis girl.